welcome to Unscripted Unlimited. I am your humble, gracious, and sexy host, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my brother, Ducky.
Yeah, who's not so humble, not so gracious, and not so sexy.
No, you're sexy. We got a lot to talk about today. Our nerd talk, nerd chat. We're going to be talking some Snyder Cut. We also have a great toy spotlight, comic spotlight, cartoon spotlight, and what else?
Character, right?
And character spotlight. We got a bunch of shit to talk about. Snyder Cut might take the character spotlight tonight, though. But we got a lot of stuff to get into. First, let's go to Doug with the plugs.
All right. You got to make sure you listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday or Friday night, mixer.com/dirtsheetdudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. We're on 10:15, 10:20 Eastern time, right after wrestling's over on Wednesday and Friday nights. Listen to us. Friday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. Of course, myself, Daniel, Eric, Clinton, and Stevie, when they want to make their booking. Sometimes we may have other people with us. It depends on who we feel like talking to. That is, of course, for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. This upcoming Friday night, we're going to be doing part two of the New Generation roster tier list. And we got a lot of big shows coming up for that. Usually on Saturdays, it depends, usually around 7 p.m., 8 p.m. Eastern time. We do various things. I know the Saturday show we have coming up, which actually will be dropped before this drops because this is pre-recorded. We will be doing Boardroom Annex, talking AEW's Double or Nothing pay-per-view. We're going to fantasy book it. It's going to be myself, Eric, Boxman, their two dudes, and Kenny. Also, Sundays, 3 p.m. Eastern time, here on the same channel, you can catch Daniel and Mindy with the Scaredy Cats. And your episode that you have coming up, you're doing a double?
Yeah, Prom Night from 2008 and The Craft.
So, all right. That pretty much does it.
All right. We got a lot to get into tonight, Doug. First, let's start with a little bit of news.
Okay.
All right. The news this week, we got A Quiet Place 2 that came out. That's more on the horror movie, spectrum of things. We got a lot of new TV shows coming out. Superman and Lois just came out. People are enjoying that. Lucifer, not a huge fan, but that just came out.
When? Some about Rugrats? They're back?
No. It's just an article.
Oh.
But there's a lot of good stuff coming out. Marvel's MCU is, thriving on Disney Plus and much more. There's a lot of things going on. Let's get into our cartoon spotlight.
Okay. Kim Possible. This is one of the Disney cartoons that I think this was probably one of the last more popular ones.
Yeah.
2002 to 2007. Starred the voices of Christy Carlson Romano and Will Friedle. Also, Taj Mahery was in it. Along with a lot of people, Gene Smart, Gary Cole, who actually voiced Kim's parents. Basically, Kim Possible is about a young lady who, she's a teenage girl, but she's a hero. Would she be considered a spy?
Yeah, I'd say not so much superhero. I'd say she more of a kind of a spy, like an agent.
Okay. So, but she really doesn't work for an agency or whatever, right?
No, she just, who's that, the kid, what's the kid's name, DJ or whatever the fuck?
Wade.
Wade that tells her to do all this shit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he just basically works for her?
Yeah. And she just fights
or
crime.
Or she works for him or whatever the fuck?
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure the
specifics.
Yeah, but that's what they do.
Yeah. So you were a huge fan of this, which is one of the reasons why I picked it.
Yeah, it was a good show. there's been quite a few movies on it, too.
Yeah. We made a mistake doing this thing upstairs.
Yeah, we did. But it's a great show. There's a lot of things about that. Obviously, the voice cast is actually a pretty, you know, these guys are all popular.
Yeah.
It's a famous voice cast. You know, Christy Romano was already having a big break with, what was the cheerleading movie? Do you remember the cheerleading movie, Doug?
Yeah, she wasn't on Bring It On, was she?
Yeah, she was, wasn't she?
No, that was Elijah Dushku.
Okay.
No, she was on...
Even Stevens.
Yeah, she was on Even Stevens.
Will Friedle, I mean, huge
Boy Meets World.
Boy Meets World. So they are Disney sweethearts already.
Yeah.
And, you know, this show, it was the Nick and Mole Rats, my favorite, Rufus.
Yeah.
Dr. Draken, I think, is a great villain with She-Go, the green chick.
Isn't she voiced by Christy Carlson Romano, too?
She might be. I think she is, yeah.
This was one of those shows. I think this is one of the last really popular Disney cartoons. I mean, I think there was a couple more that came after this, but...
Yeah, no, there was.
But I think this was the last, like, really, like, successful one. I like this show. I thought it was kind of funny. I think her parents are kind of, like, under the radar hilarious.
Yeah.
There was an episode where they were on a ski trip, and her parents were signed on to be chaperones, and she was... You know, a little nerdy or whatever. Nicole Sullivan from Mad TV, that's who She-Go was. There's the episode where they were on the ski trip and Kim and Mr. Barkin. Who I don't know if he was a principal or just some kind of teacher or whatever.
Yeah.
Who was voiced by Patrick Warburton, who actually voices Joe on Family Guy. And Ron, they were trying to get away from the mountain, but there was a big avalanche coming. And Kim's father comes on this skateboard he invented. Or not skateboard, the snowboard he invented. And he goes, "Watch out, this is going to get gnarly." And I was just like, dude, I was dying.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. I was a diet just because it's like under the radar humor. And by the guy that voices Kim's dad, you know, Gary Cole, he's actually very like underrated. I mean, he's good for playing like, the scumbag bad guy in a lot of cop shows, like the villain for the episode or whatever. But he's also, he can be funny when they ask him to be.
Yeah.
And he's the majority of the time, like he's so used to playing, you know, the bad guy role. But here he was very good as Kim's dad, just because again it was under the radar funny. But Nancy Cartwright from The Simpsons, she was Rufus.
Yeah, and it's funny about the character of Ron. You know, John Cena auditioned for the role.
What?
Yeah, so did Neil Patrick Harris. John Cena, before he got into wrestling, auditioned for the role as Ron Stoppable on Kim Possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, this would have been right around the time where he started in WWE.
Yeah. So he did. He tried. And this show is awesome for so many different reasons. I mean, I think the villains at the head of the show, not just Dr. Draken, but you remember the kid from the swamp? You remember that episode?
Yeah, I watched that episode the other day.
Yeah, I remember that freaking me out as a kid. And I just remember how cool that was.
Yeah, that was cool. What about Senior, 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 and Senior, Senior, Junior?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about them. Junior was a little pussy.
That's why, like, I remember that first episode where Kim was just like, you know, they're harmless, right? And Wade's just like, no, they did a bunch of stuff. They're not harmless. And because at first, you know, Kim and Ron went to talk to them about stuff, and you know they weren't doing any, they weren't doing anything wrong. Then Ron happened to say something, they're like, oh, you know, we could do this.
Yeah.
Way to go, Ron. But no, Ron was funny because Ron was that comedic sidekick, but also like, I wanted so bad for the two of them to start dating. I felt like they could be.
Did it ever happen throughout the course of the show?
I don't know if it happened. It may have in the movie, right?
I think so. Stitch in Time. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That was a good movie.
I think I've only seen it once. But yeah, no, this was a really good. This is one of the more, like, this is one of the very few, like, modern era cartoons, you know, from like the 2000s that I would actually watch.
Yeah.
You're going to fall off the bed. Because, yeah, and this was definitely, this was actually one of the last Disney cartoons I actually liked. This and American Dragon, Jake Long.
That was a great fucking show. We got to do that one of these days.
Yeah, we do. Well, it's on Disney Plus, so we can rewatch it when we want to.
Is it on Disney Plus?
Yes. They just added it about 6 months ago.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Disney Plus is still adding stuff. That's the beautiful thing about streaming services is, yeah. Now, you know, sometimes, well, like with Peacock and Disney Plus and I think Paramount, like they're not really going to take anything down. Netflix and Hulu take shit down all the time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, this was, I really did like this show. I mean, I know you and I were both kind of, ow, you.
Get a better bed.
Yeah. I'll get right on. Well, actually, no, I can't do that. I got to save all my money for toy hunting.
Jesus Christ.
No, I know you and I were judged earlier on because we were, you know, bringing this up on our show. We were talking about Kim Possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a good show. Like, yes, it may be kind of a girl cartoon, but guys can like it, too.
There's nothing wrong with Kim Possible.
No, I liked her. And to be honest with you, I actually thought that the character of Kim was kind of cute.
Oh, God.
You can have
crushes. It's wrong on too many levels.
You can have crushes on animated characters.
He's like 15.
When the show came out, I was 16.
Okay.
I had a crush on her back then.
Okay. Thanks for clarifying.
No problem.
Creepy bitch.
But I actually do like the actress, though, that voiced her, Christy Carlson Romano.
Yeah, she was a good young lady.
She was a fine young lady. And unfortunately, though, like, she actually did a horror movie, like, after this. Shit, I looked up the clip the other day. I forgot.
Jesus Christ.
It should be on her filmography. Okay. But yeah, she did a horror movie, and it's just like, and it was actually around the same time that Kim Possible was ending.
Really?
Yeah.
She was branching out?
Yeah. Oh boy, was she branching out. Unfortunately, she died in the movie, though.
Still alive in real life.
Yeah.
That's always good.
So, yeah, definitely. But yeah, no, Will Friedle. It's great as a goofy sidekick. So.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Everything about Kim Possible I liked. Like I said, the villains were so well thought out. I mean, Draken's kind of supposed to be like a Joker, I guess, in a weird way, maybe.
Yeah, I think kind of like a goofier version of the Joker.
Yeah. I like how Shego was always kind of like the main villain, even though she was the sidekick.
Yeah.
And her and Kim would beat the absolute hell out of each other.
Right. And again, like, I actually thought they were both kind of the same person. Because to be honest with you, like, Shego looks like a dark-haired, paler version of Kim.
Yeah. Who said she does?
And Draken and Stoppable are alike because they're both dumb.
Yeah. A couple of buffoons.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious, though. I mean, he was the main villain of the show, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
All right. My buddy Bobby's calling in. We're going to talk some Snyder Cut.
Beautiful.
Oh, hello? Bob, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, what's up?
How you doing, bud? It's great having you. Hey, Bobby.
Hey, Dougie. What's up, guys?
Not too much. Now that Bobby's in, we are going to transition, talk about some Snyder Cut. Obviously, this movie is huge. A lot of DC fans.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big deal. The Snyderverse now, people are launching to restore it. You're not the biggest DC fan. I mean, you are now, but going into this, you really enjoyed this movie, Bobby. Why?
Because it was an all-around fantastic version of DC that we've never seen before. Snyder's vision, really entitled The Dark and the Grittiness.
Absolutely. I mean, and here's the thing. A lot of the DC movies have been criticized up to this point, too.
Well,
like
deservedly.
They actually thought that Zack Snyder was doing a shitty job.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Warner Brothers is under terrible control. I was reading an article earlier today that in 2016, when they were filming the original Justice League with Snyder and Whedon, that they erased the Flash's time travel point after the boxes connected and blew up. They erased it from the original version because they didn't understand it. Like, why are you guys making and writing a movie if you don't even understand one of the most attributable parts about one character?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of Flash's whole thing, that he can go in time.
Exactly, and they didn't understand that at all, so that's why they erased it from the original cut. And he just saved that one little fucking family instead.
I mean, the mismanagement of this shit, you said a couple times, Doug, Joss Whedon should be shot in the head.
I did say that, but, like, I also did say, and well, because I was told to kind of tone it down after saying that. The only thing Joss Whedon should be allowed to work on now is if Sarah Michelle Gellar wants to start a new TV series.
Yeah, he was good at Buffy. I mean,
honestly,
he did.
Everything Joss Whedon did before Justice League was good. For some reason, Justice League was just an absolute commercial failure for him.
And critical. Like it got shit on all sides of the board. Now, I'll direct this one to Bobo. I know who your favorite character is, but who do you think was the best character in this movie?
My personal favorite is the Flash, but the most vital character, I believe, in the movie is Batman.
And you disagree with that, right, Doug? You've been doing it to bail him.
Okay. I thought Batman was actually useless in this movie. Because, you know, and I know, you know, he's a billionaire and he has all these people do his bidding or whatever. I say that the best characters in the movie, it comes down between Wonder Woman and Cyborg. Because, like, Wonder Woman, like, I just felt like they did more, especially Cyborg.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I know you kind of disagree with the fact that he was the hottest.
Maybe in that movie particular, but as the Snyderverse as a whole, if Batman didn't do anything that he did, Darkseid would easily have won. Like, if Batman would have never went to Metropolis when Superman was fighting Man of Steel, Superman was fighting Zod in Metropolis, and they were destroying the city, and then Batman had his vengeance against Superman, and then all of that whole battle between them, and Doomsday showing up with Luthor fucking sacrificing himself to the ship, pulling in Steppenwolf, and pulling
I still
in.
Contend that Superman would not have died in Batman versus Superman had Lois just gotten out of the fucking way.
I don't believe that at all, because the only way to kill Doomsday is with kryptonite, the same way Superman can die. And Superman is the only one strong enough to have been able to carry it and pierce the skin of Doomsday with kryptonite.
Yeah, Doug.
Yeah.
Well, Lois should
Wonder
have
Woman couldn't do that.
Stayed at home making breakfast.
Can't fucking do that. The Flash probably could if he gained enough velocity and hit him at the right speed, enough force.
Yeah, but he wasn't contracted.
The Flash wasn't around in that movie, exactly. I mean, he actually
yes, he
was for 3 seconds. For three
he
seconds.
Was in the movie.
That was a future version of him, though, not current time.
He was still Flash, baby. He showed up. I mean,
he was
this,
just a file on Luther's computer.
Yeah, that's true. The Snyder Cut is just a way back. I mean, I don't know if you've, since the Snyder Cut came out, Bob, I don't know if you've gone back and watched the original, but it's almost unwatchable compared to the Snyder Cut. Like,
it's
just
completely
such,
different. The
yeah.
ending's different. The villains look different. They barely mention Darkseid at all.
No, Steppenwolf says it once.
Yeah, I think it's in the beginning when he's doing the flashback.
Yeah, he says for Darkseid once, but that's it. It just doesn't make sense, really. Like, they cut out so much stuff that made sense.
They cut out the Flash. In my opinion, the backtrack, I think Aquaman was the most useless character in the movie.
I could agree with that. I mean, I could too. Yes, it was the same Aquaman because it was the same actor, but this was not the same Aquaman we saw in the Aquaman movie. Well, yeah, because this was...
No, it isn't.
That.
It isn't,
yeah.
but his role in the movie, he didn't really do much besides Cyborg throw him, and then he threw his stride a few times, and then honestly, I take that back. The most good part that he had in the movie is when he stabbed Steppenwolf in the back and lifted him up so Superman could punch him and Wonder Woman could chop his head off.
Yeah, but as far as, like, who's more useless, I mean, Batman, I can't call him useless because he brought this whole fucking thing together.
Exactly. He brought it all together, and he saved the Flash when the Flash was about to die, when he was running around the city trying to gain a charge.
Exactly. Aquaman was kind of just there. I mean,
he was just there in a cool couple of, like, badass, like, my man scenes.
Yeah, my man. Like, he is better in this movie than in the original. But it's not as drastic. Is like the Flash or Cyborg. Those are the
right.
two for me. That it's like they cut out their whole fucking story arcs.
Right.
Yeah.
But in the Snyder Cut though, there was a lot of like, because I saw like parts of the original.
Yeah.
And then like seeing like the one part where when they brought Superman back, and like in the original Wonder Woman. Was like highly against it. Like she was actually like she was so pissed off at Bruce.
Yeah.
And the Snyder Cut version, she was on board with it, and Aquaman was pussing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a totally different.
Because
movie.
To go off the original comics, like yeah, of course Wonder Woman, she's supposed to be for it. Like it's Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman, dude.
Yeah.
Well,
she's
yeah.
never going to be like, don't bring him yeah. back.
Well, because that was Joss Whedon's bullshit, because that whole scene, he was just trying to do another, like, you guys remember the original Avengers when they're all in that room arguing, you know, with Tony Stark and Captain America?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, you take your suit away, what are you? And he's like, Playboy millionaire flat. Like, they're all arguing and shit.
Yeah.
I think he was trying to do that with the Justice
League. Yeah, because they didn't get along in that first movie.
Yeah, which is fine, but I think he tried to do the same thing with the Justice League, but it doesn't really
even
work.
Even if you take away all the horrible, horrible plot holes in the Justice League, you can't never get over the mustache CGI.
No. The mustache is a hard one.
The Snyderverse was absolutely fantastic. Even the little things that weren't necessary for the movie, like the Joker scene, I absolutely loved the Joker scene. The whole nightmare timeline with the Joker and Cyborg and Deathstroke.
Yeah.
That whole scene was badass.
I wasn't a huge fan of it because that was the only time where the movie's length was starting to get... Like... Because 4 hours, it didn't feel like 4 hours.
It didn't feel like
no.
4 hours. Also, too, you and I get up early enough in the morning that, if we're up past like 9:05,
we get bitchy.
Yeah,
but it was just so damn good. But that's the only scene where it's like, all right, this could end now.
Yeah,
but I did like
It was after the climax. It was the conclusion. It was just him giving up all the fucking cliffhangers that you were supposed to get, and that hopefully we will get.
Hopefully. I like Martian Manhunter making that appearance, like when he kind of disguised himself as Superman's mom or as Clark's mom.
Yeah.
And was talking to Lois and was like, Lois, you know, you gotta live life and keep living. Don't just stay here. You know, all the stuff she said or whatever. And then she comes out and she transforms back into Martian Manhunter. It's just like, holy shit.
Yeah, that was cool. That's another thing I didn't get why they cut that out. Now, the end Martian Manhunter scene, you know about this, Bobby, and talk about it a little, because that was supposed to be a different hero. Who was that supposed to be?
It was actually, I read it was supposed to be both him, John Stewart, and Martian. I read it was supposed to be both of them, not just one.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I read it was going to be Martian and Green Lantern showing up to Bruce, not just Martian, or vice versa. That would have been fantastic. That would have been the absolute 100% inclusion of the original Justice League, aside from Cyborg, because he was in after the reboot.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been badass, and it makes sense because they're two space guys, you know?
Exactly, and like, Lantern, they hinted the Lantern in the past battle, and with the Battle of the Old Gods. I don't know why Warner Brothers would let them show him, but they wouldn't let him get Jon Stewart when they're not even using Jon Stewart.
Yeah, I mean, how do you feel about that, Doug? Because Jon Stewart's probably one of your favorite characters.
I didn't like the fact that they didn't have Green Lantern in the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, because Green Lantern is actually, like, he's basically in my top, like, superheroes or whatever.
He's a main part of the Justice League.
I always thought he was, yeah. I mean, well, if you could find the cartoon, he was.
Or the anything.
Even in the comics.
He's in every incarnation of the Justice League, pretty much.
I mean, and...
like, you can't really have, the Flash, honestly, without the Lantern. Well, like,
I personally think, though, that it was basically just because they were still pissed off about the, you know, the failure of the movie.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what it was. I think they were still kind of getting over the Ryan Reynolds thing. Like,
even though, the Green Lantern movie was 2011.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
So we're, well, when this came out in 2017, it had been like 6 years. I mean, Ryan Reynolds has done good stuff since then.
Yeah. But they're not going to reboot Hal Jordan again. If it was an absolute fucking failure, they're not going to do that again.
No. They're doing the show on HBO.
If they're going to do another Hal Jordan, they'll probably cast somebody else. Because after 2011, the first Deadpool came out in, like, what, 13 or 14?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 2014.
At that point, dude, they're not gonna put him as Green Lantern again in the Justice League if he's Deadpool now. You know what I mean? They're gonna give him somebody else. And that movie failed hard, body.
And he's making fun of the Green Lantern in every Deadpool movie.
Yeah, it's because of the Warner Brothers, dude. He's literally talking shit about Warner Brothers.
Yeah, I mean,
and how they're terrible, dude. They need to fucking sell. I'm glad that now DC Studios is under a new directive now with the Discovery merge.
Yeah, hopefully it works. And that's where I wanted to kind of lead to while we move on here. What do you think the future could be for the DCEU? Do you see the Snyderverse ever being restored, Bobby? Or do you think they go in a different direction?
I feel like it will be restored if the new executive director over DC Studios from Discovery is a fan, or if they sell DC Studios to a different production company like Netflix. In my opinion, I think Netflix would be the best company to sell DC Studios to.
I agree with them because, you know, you're always getting new original content from Netflix.
Exactly, and if you watch a lot of Netflix shit, a lot of that shit's fucking dark and, like, twisted, and, like, that fits right in with the Snyderverse. And Zack Snyder is already a huge fan of Netflix and just signed a huge contract with them.
Yeah, I mean, and they got the budgets for it. Army of the Dead was a big movie that cost a lot.
Exactly. And, like, they have Stranger Things, and
budgets.
They have...
Yeah.
Everything else that they have, like, Netflix has the money. They're, like, right fucking behind Disney's ass. In the streaming service world, at least.
Yeah, no, they're... I mean, I think they're above... I think they're the top of the top in streaming service. But as a global company, Disney can't really be beat.
No. That'd be obviously not... I didn't mean that.
But,
just in streaming.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see what more happens. And, you know, as a diehard DC fan, we'll see what happens. Moving on here, and we're going to keep Bobby on the line for this next segment. We're going to be doing our comic spotlight on The Night Gwen Stacy Died. Basically, it's a story arc. It's a huge Spider-Man story arc. It took place in The Amazing Spider-Man, number 121, 122. And this is obviously known. And you've kind of seen it in the movie, Doug.
I saw it. What? It was Amazing Spider-Man 2, right?
Yeah, they kind of used that.
I cried.
I thought that scene was horrible.
You didn't like it, Babo?
I did not like that scene at all.
Now, have you checked out the book?
When I was a kid, yeah, but I'm not really refreshed on the book.
Okay.
I mean, that was kind of in the movie, though, that was kind of a dumb way for her to die. I mean, she falls, but he
kept
her before she hits the ground.
Given Spider-Man's abilities, like, he could have easily saved her from falling down the tower.
Well, and she didn't hit the ground, though, so how the hell did she die?
She did hit the ground. When she caught her web, the momentum of the web slimmed down, and she hit her head on the ground.
Oh. Well, it's still sad. Emma Stone...
she just smacked her head on the ground really hard, but her body was still dangling. Spider-Man didn't catch her in time.
Now, what I told you about this, Bobby, you said you had criticisms of it. Is it just the way the movie did it, or do you not like the story as a whole?
I understand the story as a whole, but given the way that the movie did it and the comics did it, and given the way of Spider-Man's abilities and how precise and how fast and accurate he is, he could have saved her. Like, she could, especially in the movie.
Yeah,
or, like, while she was falling, he kind of stood there for, like, a few seconds and just kind of watched her fall. Like, he could have jumped down the elevator, used one of his hands to throw a web up for himself, and then throw another web down for her and grab her.
No,
she would have never died.
Yeah. I mean, this also, because this is a different writer, this was about the time where the man, the myth, the legend left Stan Lee, where he kind of stopped doing some Spider-Man stuff, and they had different writers. Gary Conway did this one. But it's so big because I agree, you know, he could have saved her, you know, because he's Spider-Man. But it means so much to Spider-Man and the character that's happening because he's still dealing with it. You know, that's like he's had to live with, you know, the fact that his girlfriend died. And then without that, you don't get Mary Jane or any of that shit either. So it's got a lot of impact.
Yeah. It's a different multiverse Spider-Man. That's why you don't really get the Mary Jane aspect of it.
Yeah. Well, Mary Jane comes in after because Gwen Stacy's the first girlfriend, but obviously she fucking dies here. Now, also another big impact, because the reason I like this story, at the time that this was done, the main Spider-Man's kind of arch nemesis at the time was Dr. Octopus. But after this, Green Goblin really becomes the dude because he becomes known for killing Gwen Stacy. You're a huge Green Goblin fan, Bobby. Talk about it.
I mean, I do agree with that directive part of the movie where they made Goblin more of the central villain rather than Oct, because even with in the Mary Jane part of the storyline, like, he terrorizes Mary Jane, and in the Sam Raimi trilogy, like, he takes her, dangles her off a bridge. Yeah. Like, he's always targeted the person that Spider-Man cares for the most. And, like, I really do appreciate that they really thrived in that aspect of that part of the movie. Instead of using Doc Ock. I mean, I get Doc Ock, but Doc Ock's more of just a Peter Parker versus Doc, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
More of just a them two thing. A solo just between the two of them.
This has more emotional prowess to it.
Yeah, but the Mary Jane and the Gwen Stacy, I mean, I do agree with the Goblin. I just didn't like the Goblin that they used.
No, I don't like it in the movie, but in the comics, I enjoy it because the Green Goblin, he wasn't the main villain yet, and this is the story that made him just a Spider-Man.
Yep.
And that's badass.
I do agree with that.
I mean, now he's known as the guy
The Amazing Spider-Man series, I'm not really too... That's not one of my favorite series of comics for Spider-Man.
Oh, like the comic series itself, The Amazing Spider-Man? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's still... I mean, that's old, too, though. Like, I mean, the art's good, but... Man, we're talking the 70s, dog.
Yeah.
Somewhat good, though. All right. on to the character spotlight. And
okay.
We're going to bid Bobo adieu here. Thanks for coming on, Bobo.
Hell yeah, man. It was fun.
This is awesome. And we'd love to get you out again sometime.
All right, man. Definitely.
All right, bro. Deuces.
All right. Later, Bobby.
Have a good one, guys. See you later, Dougie.
See you, Bob.
All right, Dutchie. We do have time for a couple more spotlights. So we're going to talk about a character that you're a huge fan of.
Oh, my God.
We're finally going to be delving into movies. This isn't just a superhero thing. Tell us, not only one of my favorite songs from one of my favorite movies, tell us a little bit about Axel Foley.
All right.
Eddie Murphy, ladies.
Axel Foley from Beverly Hills Cop, the Beverly Hills Cop trilogy, 1984. Basically, Axel Coley. Did you break something of mine?
No.
Okay. Axel Foley is a Detroit police detective who, in the first movie, his friend Michael Tandino gets killed, and he goes to Beverly Hills to track down the killer. And he basically shows the Beverly Hills cops, you know, some streetwise Detroit detective moves. And they did three movies out of it, and I absolutely loved the first two movies. The third movie kind of, you know, was a downgrade, especially because in the third movie they actually killed Axel's boss, Detective Todd.
Yeah.
Or Inspector Todd. And Inspector Todd actually made, like, even though he wasn't featured a lot in the first two movies, he had, like, pivotal roles in the beginning because he would always tell Axel when he feels like Axel fucked up. Like, in the second movie, he says to Axel, he's like, "Don't think, Foley, it makes my dick itch." But no, Axel, he's probably one of the best movie, you know, police officer characters that there has ever been.
Just to me, you got your Lethal Weapons, you got your Die Hards. Well, Die Hards, I wouldn't say a comedy, but to me, this is the, if someone tells you, "I want to start getting into action comedies," you show them this movie. This is the ultimate action comedy.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, and Daniel, here's the thing, too. I got into these movies because of our father.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I mean, he would be the best person to tell you about Axel Foley, but his contract demands are very high. No, Axel Foley, like, there are so many lines I could repeat from his movie. There was actually a point, too, in the first movie where he put the banana in the tailpipe of Rosewood and Taggart's car, their undercover car. And I thought that was funny one day.
Yeah.
Or I thought that was funny. So one day, you know, when I was working at Target, you know, these cars were pissing me off. So I actually went and I asked, because my bosses at the time, this was like actually after I first started, or I maybe had been there for like a year, year and a half. I was pushing carts. And I had said, can I requisition some bananas? And my buddy Cody, who knew like what I was talking about, said no. And somebody goes, well, what's the matter? Oh, why can't he requisition bananas? Cody looks at me and says, you were watching Beverly Hills Cop last night, weren't you? I said, yeah.
My banana, my tailpipe.
Yeah. Or the scene in Beverly Hills Cop 2 where they go to the Playboy Mansion and Axel looks down at his crotch and goes, wake up! Isn't this what we've always talked about? Look alive, you'll never see it again. Like he is just so fucking... Eddie Murphy back in his earlier days was hilarious.
I mean, this was his breakout role.
Yeah, because... This movie actually, because he was on Saturday Night Live for a little bit. I did a cup of coffee on there. But no, this movie, this is basically, was this after Coming to America or before?
It might have been right before.
Okay. Because this and then Coming to America and then Trading Places, I think, happened. And those were basically his breakout roles.
It was before Coming to America. This is in 1984.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great movie. I love this movie. Like, if we can actually, like, do, like, a spotlight one time on the movie, then I would definitely be, you know, into it. But, yeah, no. Axel Foley, probably one of the better police detective characters.
Ranked number 55 on Empire Magazine's 100 Greatest Movie Characters of All Time.
Anyway, Sylvester Stallone was originally supposed to be Axel?
Yes.
Oh, that would have been a completely different dynamic.
That would have sucked ass.
The movie, that would not have been.
Would have been terrible.
Yeah, because Sylvester Stallone really isn't funny.
He can be, but he's not, like, hilarious.
No.
So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, check out Beverly Hills Cop.
One, two, or three. I mean, three is okay.
Yeah, but, I mean, first, they're all good. But the first one, I mean, come on. That was all the little nuances and just that movie so fucking good. That's like my favorite, one of my favorite movies still.
Yeah. I like the first one. Like the second one is my favorite, but the first one, yeah, you can't beat the first one.
Yeah, it's really hard to beat the first one.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, definitely, check that out.
All right, Doug, let's go into our toy spotlight to finish us off here.
All right.
Bust out your game.
Okay. So we are going to be talking about, I should have kept it over here. We are going to be talking about the Captain America board game as this light is about to fall on my head. The Captain America board game, which I recently had just discovered. I had no idea that it existed, but it was released in 1977. Daniel and I were no longer, were not even thoughts at that point. So this is, it's for ages 8 to 15, so Daniel and I might be able to play it.
Sweet.
we got about 2, 3, or 4 players.
Oh, this board's cool.
Yeah,
I haven't seen this board. We'll put pictures on the Instagram, by the way.
Yeah. We'll definitely Instagram. A lot of the toys that we do toy spotlights on, we'll put Instagram pictures up.
Yeah.
All right. So be the first to land Captain America and the Falcon at Satellite Lookout. So
So each player selects two playing pieces of matching color. The player spins the highest number and the spinner starts the game. Let's see. So let's see what all we got here. So, we got the spinner. Got spinner, we got some pieces. So you can be green. Blue. Green, blue, red, or yellow. I feel like that green, blue, red, or yellow is like the those are the default colors of of board games. Like you're never gonna have a board game where like one of the primary colors is you could be the orange piece.
No. It's so cool because they have a lot of the lesser known characters on here too. They got the villain MODOK. They got Yellow Jacket, which is actually Ant-Man when he's like a bumblebee type character.
I mean, the game pieces are you're going to be both if you're red or whatever color, red or blue. Like the red and blue red, blue, green and yellow pieces are Captain America and Falcon.
Yeah.
So that's who you are playing as.
But they even have, like, Thor on the board and shit.
Thor's on the board. I think I saw Iron Man, right?
Iron Man's there, yep. Hawkeye, your boy.
No.
Well, Lost.
So, yeah, no, this is one of those games. We got a lot of games lately.
Yeah, well, we're going to play it.
Yeah, but, yeah, this is one of those games I'm really looking forward to playing. And also, too, you could tell because, back in the day, but board games used to be, like, you could tell a board game is really old school by, like, where the directions are. Because, like, back in the day, they used to have the directions, like, in the box.
Yeah.
So when I saw this morning when I got it out that I couldn't find an instruction box, I started flipping out.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, never mind, it's right here. So, but yeah, so like when you land by exact count on a green space, you receive aid from an Avenger friend and move ahead to the number indicated on that space. So this is gonna be one of those fun games, I think, to play. We got a lot of board games we'll be spotlighting coming up on these shows.
Very
and
cool.
We'll actually be playing some of them to let people know how good they actually are.
Absolutely. And I'd like to start a Twitch stream where we do video and play the games on there. Just more content for our fans.
I'm cool with that too. I think it would probably be you and I, participating because our reliable friends don't live in the States.
But yeah. So we got a lot of cool stuff coming. That was our toy spotlight. Yeah. We're gonna take it home here, Doug.
Going to take it home next week. We will be back next week. Not necessarily sure what all we're going to be doing. I got to think for a day or two on what the cartoon's going to be.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that just about does it.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining Unscripted Unlimited. This is a blast, like it has been.
Yeah. No, I love doing this show. Fuck the rest of the show.
Yeah, fuck the wrestling show. So we're going to keep killing you with this. Big special thanks to Bobo again for coming on. And everybody, have a
And thank you to Eric for setting it up and being our guy, our audio guy.
The key to our hearts, yeah.
Yeah.
A big shout out to Eric. And enjoy your guys' day and make sure to tune in tonight for our show. For our big Boardroom Antics show. And thank you, everybody. Have a good one.